to Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
I think the thing that probably has Texan fans the most nervous right now is that the narrative surrounding the first two games was, well, they played their B-minus game and they still were able to come away with wins in those games. And I don't think that was an unfair take, those first two games. They, like, based on what in our head the best is for this team, they didn't do that. But they won the games, and that's good. Now, they're doing the same things. They go into the home of a good team, Minnesota, and they get destroyed. And so, now, again, it's three games in. It's a 17-game season. It's a long season. But this is the only evidence we have to go off of so far. Is this who they are?
Right, right. Somebody yesterday told me on X, they said, the Texans are ass. They can only beat bad teams, not good ones. And I'm like, well, I don't know. The hierarchy doesn't quite line up there. I feel like ass is the teams that the Texans just beat.
Right.
So but they just got killed by a good team. So they're somewhere between ass and
the good teams. Yeah.
I think that a lot of people have pointed out that, well, look, the Vikings, you know, they handled the 49ers the week before, too. I would disagree. The 49ers were actually able to move the ball. They were able to run the ball really well without Christian McCaffrey in the game. They were running at 5 yards a clip with their backup running back there. But it was not light. Yeah, like, it was not comfortable for the 49ers, but it didn't look like whatever the hell that was yesterday.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, so the Texans are very much still, if I have to put them in the hierarchy, all right, how much different are they than the team that went to Baltimore last year and looked like
they just flat out could not compete
against one of the better teams in the NFL?
Yeah.
That's what they looked like yesterday.
Yeah.
Is they just flat out couldn't do it. You can blame it on penalties or what have you. That's what tends to happen when you're outmatched, is you start doing stupid stuff, you know? So, well, you got to throw sand in the bully's eyes because you're outmatched.
They were, you know, we look at those power rankings every Tuesday. They were a top five team in the eyes of a lot of the national experts following their 2-0 start. You know, and I think those experts were looking at it the same way we were, which is, okay, they haven't even played that well. Here's what, in my mind, I think they could be. And, boy, if they get to that, that's definitely a top-five team.
Yeah.
Well, now here's evidence that they're not a top-five team. And the scary thing about this is I don't think they become a top-five team unless the offensive line gets better.
And the thing with the offensive line, and this is where I get nervous about it, is, and you know as I do, I like to send my little clips out to various offensive linemen that I've played with. It is, to them, it just feels like so much of the last however many years of them being kind of shocked at how fundamentally unsound some of the good players or the veteran players on the offensive line are.
Highly paid players.
Yeah, I don't care how good you are, you're supposed to be. When you're turning your hips and just getting yourself out of position and catching blocks, you're not a good offensive lineman.
No.
And Chris Strausser, the offensive line coach, all right, maybe he's not the guy. Problem is, it's week three of the regular season, and this is the way the offensive line is playing. If you want to genuinely capitalize on all the talent you have on that offense, and I don't care who's at running back, then it's really hard to go far with the offensive line playing the way they are.
They are, yep, and they had illegal formation penalties yesterday. They had false starts yesterday. Happened at the worst possible times. We'll get into the day that Laremy Tunsil. I say the day that Laremy Tunsil had. It was really just one quarter worth of football, and he almost personally torpedoed the Texans' chances at least getting momentum going in the game. I'm not going to say he cost them the game. They lost 34-7.
For a guy who's been one of the most penalized offensive linemen in the league over these last several years, it was kind of it was like the cherry on top.
Yes,
I think, of a really bad Sunday.
Well, the illegal formation calls, and again, these calls are because the tackles are lining up too far off the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
They're trying to get an angle on the edge rushers.
Yeah.
And it's been a point of emphasis for the league since the season opener on Thursday Night Football in Week 1 between the Ravens and the Chiefs. All you had to do is watch that game and you can see, oh, okay, well, they're calling this a little closer this year. While you're on the field, you can check with the referee to see how you're lined up.
Just like a receiver does.
Correct.
And that's largely what offensive linemen have realized if they've been paying attention.
So here was Laremy Tunsil. I'll read Laremy Tunsil's answer about this thing and we'll play Titus Howard audio about this. But the lack of accountability is infuriating with these two in particular on this. Here's Laremy Tunsil on the illegal formation calls. He said, quote, they tried to make an example out of us. The first 2 weeks, we lined up the same with no problem. Now it's a problem. I feel like somebody told them to make an example out of us. Got to call it the same on both sides. Think how silly that is. Think of how stupid that sounds. I feel like somebody told them, I'm guessing the league or the officials, to make an example out of the Houston Texans.
Right, yes, that's...
Something's going on here.
Why would they make an example out of the 20th best offensive line?
All the other officials around the league for the past several years have been calling me for these same things.
Yeah,
not just the illegal alignment, but just the false starts. He's had so many false starts.
I mean, it's
somebody who's a known tax fraud is acting like they came after me, they targeted me. Yeah, dude, you committed white-collar crime 3 times already. What am I supposed to cry a river for you?
I feel like somebody told them to make an example out of us.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the victim.
It's as simple as... No, and I'll tell you, like, just the absolute and inane part of it is the way that Titus Howard responded to it, too. Yeah. I mean, try not to flip out when you're listening to this, because remember, as I tell you, all you have to do as the offensive tackle is check with the official before the play.
Right. Here is Titus Howard. This is courtesy of Will Kunkel of Fox 26. Titus Howard on the illegal formation calls.
Yeah, we didn't have one call the first 2 weeks. So, I mean, we lined up the same way we lined up the first 2 weeks tonight, and then it was just some reason tonight they were like, all right, we're just going to call them. But it was just inconsistent.
What were they saying it was?
Same guy be up further on the line. I mean, but then again, the next play, you'll be in the same spot, and they're like, oh, yeah, you're good. So, like, I mean, I don't know. That's tough. So, I mean, I just moved up further as I could, and then I looked at the guy, and he was like, are you good? So I was like, I mean, I'm lined up even with the center now. So, I mean, if that's what I got to do, I got to do it. But, I mean, definitely something that – I mean, we're going to have to work with the NFL with, like, because, I mean, it's a problem all around the league for all tackles, having to move up so far in the line of scrimmage. And then it becomes a problem on the road games when you're on silent count and then guys getting out the ball before you get a can because you're so far up. So it's just something you got to work on.
Yeah, you got to play by the rules. It sucks, doesn't it? This is something that defensive linemen have been complaining about forever. And they're enforcing it this year.
Yeah.
You know, like, defensive linemen have been complaining forever, myself included, about the way that they were starting to let offensive tackles just line up so deep. But this year, for the offensive linemen who have been paying attention, or perhaps if their offensive line coaches had told them to, they've realized, like, okay, yeah, you got to check with the official. You got to be in communication with the official to be sure they're aligned properly.
Well, that's very inconvenient, Seth. I don't know if you're a Titus Howard, but he sounded very inconvenient.
I didn't realize we were going to be targeted.
By having to check with the official.
By having to check with the official to be sure that you're legal. And he just gave you the very reason that, yeah, on the road, it does suck. Sorry you got to play by the rules when you're on the road there. Sorry you also, but left out of all of this is the false starts. Like, is it new this year that you're not allowed to leave entirely before the snap count?
Yeah.
Because first Titus Howard, then Juice Scruggs, idiotically, I give him a little bit of a pass because he's a young player. When he bobbed his head, jerked his head up too much, they've been enforcing that for a long time now. I don't give him a pass for doing the exact same thing on the next play, but they didn't call him for it because Laramie Tunsil had a false start.
Right.
Egregiously obvious false start.
Yeah.
It's just, come on, man. These guys acting like somehow they're the victims here is so infuriating.
Yeah.
And again, when they're as sloppy as they are in actually executing the actual football plays too, there is no comfortable place where you're going to be able to find refuge, man. There's no place where somebody's going to listen to you and say, like, oh, yeah, I know you guys really sucked actually playing football yesterday, but also it seems unfair that they enforced the rules on you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Text message. Titus said he checked with the officials. Exactly.
Right.
He checked with the officials. He makes it sound like it's inconvenient to have to check with the officials.
Right.
And they said I was okay. Yeah. Do that every play.
Yeah. It's not rocket science, man. As much as those guys are on social media, I'm surprised they haven't seen very former offensive linemen talk about that a lot.
For real.
They've had, they just realized, all right, you got to check with the official.
Yeah, yeah. Here's Laramie Tunsil. This is a quote. This is courtesy of Aaron Wilson. Quote from Laramie Tunsil on the false starts, of which he had two yesterday in the first half. False starts, I want people to understand we all have to be on the same communication. I'll take accountability because they're calling my name, but it takes all of us.
Yeah, so he's blaming the center on that one. And this is the thing. He's blamed so many centers over the years.
Take full accountability, but I didn't do nothing.
He's blamed so many centers. Yeah. So many centers. It's always the center's fault. It's never Laremy Tunsil. All the other offensive linemen seem to be able to figure it out. And yet Laremy Tunsil, who leads the league in false starts since 2018 or whatever the graphic was the other day, Laremy Tunsil has 10 penalties already this season. The league leader had 20 last year. It's the center's fault. All right. Yep. It's not Laramie's fault is the important message there.
I'd rather see Blake Fisher on a trial by fire. This is a text message. On a trial by fire than watching someone give away five drives pre-snap.
Yeah, and I'll tell you the other thing, too, and I'll go back to Bobby Slowick and the protections he's calling. Look, sometimes you get a tight end on a defensive end. There's certain that plays, is. And it's not like it should never happen, but these guys are doing this full turn protection where you're just leaving a guy that's played tight end for a little bit over 2 years, Cade Stover, on Jonathan Grenard. I was happy that John Grenard got 3 sacks yesterday. I wish he'd gotten 6. It's the ultimate insult when a team decides, oh yeah, this rookie tight end's going to block you.
Yeah. We'll get to talk about Grenard in about 5 minutes and acknowledge me, so don't worry about that. Grenard had a great game yesterday. Just to contextualize Laramie's day yesterday. And again, I'm not saying that Laremy Tunsil cost the Texans the game. They lost 34-7. What I am saying is that there are certain junctures in the game where there's a fork in the road and you can get back into the game and make it something other than a 34-7 loss.
Yeah.
And it's seemingly at each of those junctures in the first half, Laremy Tunsil was directly involved with sabotaging his own team's chances of doing so. His first false start was probably the least damaging of all of them because it was on first down. It was a first and 10, mm-hmm. made it first and 15. If you're going to get a false start, first and 10 at the Minnesota 45, that's probably the place to do it. It backs you up to midfield. You're not in field goal range yet, whatever. There was 8.5 minutes left in the first quarter. The notable thing about this is a couple of things. One, the Texans had just picked up 2 quick first downs after the first touchdown of the game by the Vikings. So the Texans are getting a little something going to respond to that drive, the short drive by the Vikings after CJ's first interception of the game. Ultimately, this is the drive that would end with Kyme Fairburn's first missed field goal of the year. The other reason this drive is noteworthy is because Andre Ware lost his mind when Laremy false started. Here's what it sounded like.
Looks like a false start of the Texans. Let's find out who.
Before the snap, false start. Offense, number 78. It's a 5-yard penalty. Still first down.
He got it out of the way early. Laremy Tunsil.
It's every week, though. I mean, you're a Pro Bowl player. There's no excuse for that. None.
He didn't get it out of his system either. No. He'd have 2 false starts in this game.
No, don't worry. Yeah, yeah.
This is when I felt bad for Andy, the engineer, who was in watching with us.
Yeah.
I think I spit some kolache on him during that false start. Or no, I think it might have been the second
later
false start.
Yeah.
I had a mouthful of kolache, and I got it. I got as angry as I've been in maybe 7 years.
Yeah.
When Laremy Tunsil had a false start. Yeah. And I said it with a mouthful of kolache.
Right.
I appreciate you guys. I know you probably had to stifle a laugh at that one. You guys, I was sitting in the back of the room. You guys were all in the front.
Seth was screaming with a full mouth of food.
I was like, like a character in a mob movie, you know, like Fat Seth. You know all those mobsters named Seth?
Yeah.
Fat Seth flipping out with a kolache. You know how they eat kolaches, too.
Oh,
all those
God.
Mobsters. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sitting in my salami shop in New Jersey.
Eating kolaches named Seth. So that we'll get to that one. So that was the first false start. The other 3 penalties by Laremy Tunsil all came on third down, and they came within a quarter of play. The second penalty was his first illegal formation penalty. That was on a 3rd and 7 at the Texans' 33-yard line. It nullified a 16-yard catch by Xavier Hutchinson that would have gotten the Texans to midfield.
It was a nice catch by Xavier Hutchinson.
Yeah, this is
nice throw, too.
This was with 37 seconds left in the first quarter.
Yeah.
It went from 3rd and 7 to 3rd and 12, nullified that play, and the Texans punted 2 plays later. The false start that had mobster Fat Seth screaming with kolache in his mouth was the 3rd consecutive false start by a Texan. They started out 3rd and 4 at the Minnesota 25. So at the very least, you're looking at this drive going, you know what? Either A, 4 down territory, or B, field goal, you get on the board, it's 14-3 or whatever the score was at the time. At least you get on the board, you get some points. But then Tytus Howard false starts and Juice Scruggs false starts.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, it's 3rd and 14 and Laramie's like, you guys aren't going to have all the fun. I'm going to false start too. And makes it 3rd and 19.
Yeah.
And that drove it out of field goal range. That took it from the 35 to the Minnesota 40. That made it a 57-yard field goal.
And that was not a false start where Laramie, like, oh, the timing wasn't right with the center or something. Nope, he was just there off on his own.
Yeah.
Deep into the backfield.
By the way, he committed another penalty on 3rd and 19 that got declined.
Right. It was 4 straight penalties.
Yeah.
It was an illegal formation there on the 4th.
What a joke.
The one they're complaining about. And I know people get upset because, like, oh, why are the officials making such a big deal out of this? We heard it from Tytus Howard. They don't like having to be up. The offensive tackles don't like being closer to the line because it makes their jobs harder, especially when you look like you've gained 27 pounds this year and that you move like an overweight ballerina who's 30 years past her prime. It's harder. It's harder when you're not in shape to actually get back and play the proper technique when you have to play by the rules.
Yep. Last one by Laramie of the 4 penalties that he got literally within like a quarter worth of play. 3rd and 10, Houston 40, 2.5 minutes to go in the second quarter, and he gets an illegal formation penalty that nullifies a 17-yard catch by Tank Dell that would have given the Texans a 1st and 10 in Minnesota territory, down 14, trying to get points before the half. Instead, the drive ended with, you guessed it, a punt. So if you look at the Texans' drive chart for the first half, it's a lot of punts.
Yeah.
It's an interception, a missed field goal, punt, 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 punt. And all of those punt, other than the missed field goal drive, all the other punting drives were torpedoed by Laramie Tunsil penalties.
Where's Mike Munchak? Is he up in PA right now? He's not coaching this year. I think he retired from coaching.
I think that's
the only option at this point. I'm always careful and hesitant to criticize position coaches, but I know one thing. I played against lines that were coached by Mike Munchak, and they didn't do the crap that the Texans are doing. They were on it. They were cohesive. They used good technique. They were nasty. They were all the things that this offensive line is not right now, and they've got the wrong offensive line coach to fix it. Maybe it's not Chris Strasser's fault, but he ain't fixing the problem. That is a sloppy, disheveled, careless mess. They're slovenly. They don't look like they care about doing the finer things right, whether it's adhering to the rules or using proper technique or knowing what the hell they're doing. It's really bad. It's bad.
Is that who it's going to fall on if this keeps up? Strasser?
At the very least, I mean, that's the one thing you could swap out or do differently.
It's the easiest thing.
Kind of like when your quarterback isn't developing. All right, well, we've got this guy under contract. We got to try something different.
Mm-hmm.
Then maybe it's his fault, maybe it's not.
Yeah.
I mean, Chris Strasser was up in Indianapolis when they weren't all that happy with the offensive line play as well. We'll all recall that.
Is Laramie playing nervous? I sense some big game anxiety.
No,
he's not
nervous
enough.
He never gets nervous about a damn thing.
He's not nervous enough.
Yeah, exactly.
Can Laramie and Tytus play
He's nervous he's not going to be invited to the White's party in the Hamptons, you know?
Here's a great question. Can Laramie Tunsil and Tytus Howard play for a good, tough offensive line coach?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. Would they spit the bit on that? Like, if they had old Alex Gibbs Sr. come in or something, how would they respond to that?
Right. Boy, Laramie is catching some. Laramie and Slowick are the two that are catching the most.
I mean, ultimately, too, it all comes back to Slowick. Yeah. And I think that it's funny because there's some things about the play calling in the passing game that I can excuse just because they've got limitations on the offensive line and in the run game, and yet that all falls back on Slowick. So I can't give him a pass on that.
Right.
The 49ers the week before ran the ball, even though they weren't good versus the Vikings, they didn't look completely incompetent the way the Texans did yesterday. And they did it without Christian McCaffrey. You know, I go, hey, Texans don't have Joe Mixon. All right, great. You know, they did nothing. How many yards did Cam Akers have?
21.
21 yards.
Yeah.
And Cam, I think in pass protection too, Cam's not the same guy that Joe Mixon is.
No. Hey, reminder, we're giving away some tickets to U of H and Iowa State a little later on this hour. So be listening for that. In the meantime, let's get to acknowledge some of the big performances, noteworthy happenings from over the weekend. We do it every Monday at this time. I will say a name. Ben will play the Roman Reigns hotkey, saying acknowledge me, and we will acknowledge. Big performances. I said it earlier this segment. Jonathan Grenard.
Acknowledge me!
Here was the first of his three sacks yesterday.
Stroud under center. Texans down 7-0. CJ fakes the handoff. In the pocket, he's blasted and sacked. Jonathan Grenard. Former Texans making plays everywhere.
Yeah, that was on the heels of Kamu Grugier-Hill getting an interception on the first play of the game. Blake Cashman made a few plays out there. Hell, Shaq Griffin made a few plays out there.
That's right.
Yeah. David Quesenberry got in the fourth quarter because they lost their right tackle.
I had asked in the pregame show who was most likely to get an unsportsmanlike amongst the former Texans.
Yeah.
None of them ever probably felt agitated enough. They were all having such success on the field.
Like, these Texans are being awfully accommodating, actually.
I feel kind of bad for what we're doing to these poor Texans.
Now, should Jonathan Grenard have felt slighted that they kept throwing tight ends at him?
Yes, 100%. Yes, 100%.
Disrespect.
Yeah, disrespect. I mean, some of the stuff the Texans are doing, pass protection, it's like, okay, you're using, it's seven-man pass protection. And yet, the weak link in using seven men to pass protect is you've got your rookie tight end out on Jonathan Grenard. Right. Like, what the hell are you even doing?
Yeah.
What the hell are you even doing? Of course that's going to happen.
Yep.
I don't think anybody really blames Cade Stover in any of that. It's just CJ couldn't even get to the top of his drop on that play.
Yeah. Grenard had three sacks and three TFLs in that game.
Good for him.
That's as good. That is about as good a revenge game as you could draw up right there.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
Three sacks, three TFLs, mm-hmm. man.
Said he's happy to be where he is.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, they're 3-0, and he's doing a hell of a job for them.
Swarm? Is he Swarm?
He is Swarm.
He is Swarm. I'd say he's Swarm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, to be fair, Danielle Hunter, who they replaced him with, I think is Swarm also.
It's pretty good. How much did you pay? How old is the guy? There's all that. Where that'll be interesting when you get to the end of the year and how is Jonathan Grenard doing? He was a guy that had never really developed until his final year and wasn't able to stay healthy. So there's all – I don't want to like all of a sudden act like that was the worst thing they did to swap those guys out. But I am I'm genuinely happy that Jonathan Grenard is having a good season.
I am too. I mean, this is a Viking, so it's not like they're going to beat the Texans in the division or be in competition for – anybody, any former Texan who's over in the NFC, I'm fine wishing good things for.
I hope, too, the next time – if the Texans' offensive line doesn't get their crap together – I hope they play a clean game where they can't try to use penalties as a red herring for how the league is out to get them. Like, let's not forget the times you guys are getting physically destroyed by lesser athletes, or at least guys who are paid a lot less than you.
Yep.
I mean, just catching blocks, letting linebackers drive you into the quarterback's lap. Just, do they hate CJ? I don't know. Maybe they hate CJ. Maybe that's the untold story now.
Maybe. Okay, this is going to sound strange because he was not good on Friday, but Justin Verlander.
Acknowledge me!
We're acknowledging Justin Verlander not for his outing on Friday in which he gave up a whole bunch of runs and probably sealed his fate as far as the playoffs go, but that, in all likelihood, Seth, is his last appearance at Minute Maid Park, Justin Verlander, on Friday.
In a regular season game.
Well, we'll see if he's on the playoff roster. I said maybe Minute Maid Park appearance. Maybe. And he himself kind of acknowledged, the fans kind of acknowledged it. They gave him a standing ovation coming off of the field. Here was Justin Verlander on the standing ovation.
It meant a lot. It really did. Yeah. That was honestly pretty special to me. I know how these fans know the game. They pay attention. They know I'm out there grinding and, trying to give everything I can. I've worked as hard as humanly possible. Trying to bounce back as quick as I can from the injury and get back out there. And, for them to have that ovation after such a difficult day. It touched me.
Yeah.
It did.
So, I mean, at the very least, the two sides, the fans and Verlander, are kind of dancing around knowing that it's a distinct possibility. That's the last time he pitched at Minute Maid Park on Friday. And if that's the case, the book will soon be closed on, in my opinion, the greatest pitcher in Astros history, Justin Verlander. I know he didn't have as many seasons as some, but when he had full seasons, he pitched three full seasons for the Astros, okay? He came in 2017 in September. That's a partial season. He came back here last year, partial season. He basically missed two seasons with Tommy John.
Mm-hmm.
The three full seasons he pitched, he was runner-up for the Cy Young and won the Cy Young twice. It doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah.
You know? So I just wanted to acknowledge Justin Verlander because he said he probably came back a little too fast from the neck injury, but this may be the last that we see of him.
Yeah, there's a lot of, depending on how the Astros season turns out and you know, how deep they go in the playoffs and everything else like that, is that feels, as this franchise has had a lot of turning of the pages with various players through the years, this would feel kind of poignant just because Verlander was the spark of really the beginning of it all.
Absolutely. You know, that trade.
Ignore 2015, yeah. But just, you know, 2017 was the first real year of this extreme playoff run.
His place in Astros history is significant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He basically drove Harvey out of town.
He did.
Well,
he did.
He doesn't get enough credit for that.
No, you're right. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was like St. Patrick driving the snakes out of Ireland.
Same exact thing. Mm-hmm. Yusei Kikuchi.
Acknowledge
actual
me.
Pitcher pitching well. Yusei Kikuchi became the first pitcher in Astros history over the weekend, Seth, where the team has gone 9-0 in their first nine starts since joining the team. He's the first pitcher since Max Scherzer in 2021. To do this in all of Major League Baseball,
it's been a lot of fun with Kikuchi.
It has.
It's been really cool. Also, just in terms of how the Astros pitching staff with the coaching staff and analytical staff through with multiple guys this year has reminded us. Oh yeah, okay, they're the same old unit that can just take guys and get the absolute best out of them, which is exciting.
Yeah,
when it's I think more so in Houston, the thing we're spoiled by is that you get all these young pitchers that develop, and in any other franchise or most other franchises, I think you're like, oh well, small sample size, we'll see. In Houston, it tends to stick. Or if it's a veteran player that I mean, like Gerrit Cole and Charlie Morton both came here and flipped their careers around, and it stuck.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it's really cool. So you can see it with the young pitchers as well as the veteran guys. And now it's just a question of not to look too far in the future. All right, we get Kikuchi and just want. Maybe a little hometown discount, maybe. Just
yeah,
you like
bring
it here.
Yeah,
we like
man.
You. Yeah,
you like it here. I saw that.
Can we work some kind of exotic deal to where like he gets a tax break on having to pay taxes in Japan and everything too?
Yeah,
I don't
something,
know.
Something.
Get dodgy with it.
Yeah.
Take all those analytics folks and start turn them into tax consultants.
There you go. There
yeah.
you go. Andy Dalton.
Acknowledge.
We're
me.
Acknowledging Katie's finest, Andy Dalton. Got the Carolina Panthers off the schneid yesterday mm-hmm. in a very impressive win over the Las Vegas Raiders. 26 of 37, 319 yards, and three touchdowns. Getting the Carolina Panthers their first win of the year. Here was Andy Dalton after the game talking to Aditi Kinkwabala, the sideline reporter.
Your wife, your parents, they were losing their minds today. How about you? You've been in a lot of big games. How did you enjoy this one?
Oh, this is so much fun. I mean, when you haven't had it for a while, there's definitely things that you miss, getting to be out there, being in the huddle, being around those guys, and I had a ton of fun today.
All right, I've got one trivia question for you. How many quarterbacks in the National Football League this year have thrown for 300 yards and three passing touchdowns?
No, I don't know. I don't know.
One. His name is Andy Dalton.
Hey, we'll take it. We won the game. That's all that matters.
I'll credit Andy Dalton there because I think when you're asked a question like that, it's obvious that the answer is going to be something like that. But he's like, listen, I just... I'll intentionally fail the IQ
right,
test
right,
on this one,
right.
And I'll be like, "Yeah, is it adults? I think it's adults.
Adults.
That's what they call me. That's adults. What I want them to call me." Not a good look for now. The Panthers reportedly are adamant that they will not trade Bryce Young,
right,
despite
right.
having received several calls. I think if he does get traded, that's probably something in the offseason.
Yeah.
You know, like right now, nobody's going to trade for Bryce Young thinking like this is the guy we need to fix our issues now. But it's a play for the future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with you on that. I'll tell you what, the one thing, like if I'm Roger Goodell and I'm watching that interview and I'm hearing like the only quarterback to throw for more than 300 yards and three touchdowns 3 weeks into the season, it's one thing that it's Andy Dalton. It's another thing that it's only happened one time in the first 3 weeks of the season.
He's been around long enough. Dude, we do this every year. After 3 weeks of the season, there's all these stories and columns and narratives and 20,000 word Bill Barnwell pieces about how the league has changed, and then halfway through the season you realize like, oh, okay, that's, it's not that much different than it's ever been. So I wouldn't think after week three that they're thinking that.
No.
They would prefer there to be more offensive fireworks.
Yeah.
I've been toying with Mel Kiper's idea of banning the cover two a little bit. I kind of like, can you imagine the offensive explosion if all the defensive players had to line up within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage?
Dude.
I think it'd be kind of fun.
Would that be good for the Texans? I think it would be.
I think it would be.
Miko and Tank and Steph Diggs? That would be, yeah. All right, a couple more.
I mean, it would be horrible for their run game. They can't run. Okay. They can't run when the
defense
has...
Are you telling me the Texans won't be able to run the football?
They have seven guys lined up 30 yards deep.
I take it all back. It would be great for the Texans. Yeah, they can't run the ball anyways.
There would basically be no run game in the NFL.
Patrick Mahomes.
Acknowledge me.
Here's why I'm acknowledging Patrick Mahomes. Not because he engineered another primetime win last night over the Atlanta Falcons. By the way, the Chiefs have won 9 straight games, I believe, and they by a combined 54 points. It's the lowest margin for a 9-game winning streak, something along those lines like that. They've been winning a lot of close games. Here's why I'm acknowledging Patrick Mahomes. In a since-deleted tweet during the Nebraska loss to Illinois on Friday night, Dylan Raiola,
the guy
quarterback
that looks like Pat Mahomes
for Nebraska, not just looks like him, but acts like
right,
him.
Right, like tries to mimic him. Yeah.
Does all of his little pregame rituals.
Like he's
going to
get hired for shopping mall openings or something.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
The Pat Mahomes impersonator.
Or like football's a Broadway show and he can maybe be his understudy or something like that. Patrick Mahomes tweeted on Friday night, since deleted, "All right, the dude can stop acting like me now," with the side eyes. I'm with you, dude. Dylan Raiola is annoying as hell.
Kind of creepy.
Yes.
Kind of creepy if you're Pat Mahomes.
Yeah.
Like, okay, am I going to get a restraining order against
this
guy at some point?
Yeah, it's just
weird. I bet Raiola's probably had his NIL reps reach out to Pat Mahomes to see if they could
do some collabs.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. We could do the same thing. We could dance on TikTok.
Oh.
We could do one of the...
Oh,
that little boot stance.
And Jackson Mahomes directing the whole thing, Patrick's brother. All right, last one here.
Did my boots stop working?
last one. Pro Football Hall of Fame voters.
Acknowledge
people
me.
Like John McClain and the like. I'm acknowledging you in advance for please, please, please doing the right thing and denying Eli Manning Hall of Fame admittance. Please. They announced the ballot last week. There's 167 names on the ballot, you know, and they'll whittle it down to 50 and then 25. And then ultimately there will be 5 guys that go into the Hall of Fame. There's an odds board that came out over the weekend. And I know you saw this, Seth, that has Eli Manning as a 1-5 chance. That's an 83% probability of getting in on the first ballot.
Yeah.
Eli Manning was not a good quarterback.
I know.
He was not a good football player. He won 2 Super Bowls, but this
he's
is
Joe
his
Flacco
career.
Times 2.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. He was a good quarterback. He just wasn't a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Don't make me open up the back.
Yeah,
I mean,
Sean, you got to remember, there's very few quarterbacks that just even last.
That's
as
fair.
Long as he,
no,
like,
you're
he was
right.
A good
you're
quarterback.
Right. You're right. Yeah,
he just wasn't a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Yeah, he was literally 117-117 in his career.
Yeah. Well, but he also
an exact 500.
He played in an era where you could suck for the first 3 years, and they would give you time to work it out and everything. He became a good NFL quarterback.
His first 3 years, he actually went 1-6 his rookie year, but then he went 11-5 and 8-8.
Oh, so that wasn't the bad part of it. Okay.
Yeah, like the really bad stretch for him was after he turned 30. Like after he turned 32, he turned 32 in 2013. 7-9, 6-10. 6-10, then an 11-5 renaissance, 3-12, 5-11, 1-3.
I think the only thing about Eli Manning that I don't like about, well, it's not the only thing, but okay, you get extra credit for the Super Bowl victories, and he made some incredible plays in the clutch in those Super Bowl victories. But I always feel like, all right, well, but it is the quarterback position, and in those games, you might as well give a couple of the defensive linemen Hall of Fame bids for it too. because those Giants games in the Super Bowl, it was as much about the pass rush for guys who were, you know, OCU Mignora should be in the Hall of Fame then as well.
Right.
Because they were brilliant and because they were awesome in a couple of Super Bowl runs. But somehow for the quarterback, none of the other regular season stuff matters except for those two Super Bowls.
Eli's record after age 32 was 39-60. And that included an 11-5 season.
How many Pro Bowls did he make?
Four.
Oh. How many times was he All-Pro?
Zero. Zero.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
He was a solid NFL quarterback.
Solid.
He wasn't like he wasn't even anywhere close to a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Solid. Okay.
But he's a first ballot.
The solid equal good.
Why, Sean? Because he played in New York, man. It's a Northeast.
Well, and his last name is Manning.
Yeah. That's true as well.
Those two things, I think, for sure. So that my acknowledgement isn't for Eli. It's the opposite. My acknowledgement is for the John McClains of the world in advance, not letting Eli in.
Well, Eli, if I hear a single mention of Archie Manning in any argument for why Eli Manning should be a first ballot Hall of Famer, I just like, what are we even doing here? Is this an aristocracy?
Yeah.
Is this Prince William all of a sudden?
Oh,
what the hell?
Oh, my God. All right, let's give away those football tickets. Caller number five wins a 4-pack of tickets to this Saturday's U of H Iowa State game. 713-572-4610. That's 713-572-4610. We've got U of H tickets to give away every day this week. So keep it tuned here to Sports Radio 610. We got Monday Night Football tonight here on Sports Radio 610. Jacksonville and Buffalo, the Texans' next two opponents, play each other tonight. I think this is an interesting one. Who are you rooting for in tonight's game? I think probably tells you about what you think about the Houston Texans on the heels of yesterday's blowout loss to the Minnesota Vikings. I'll explain coming up next.